Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. Got a variety of sports updates for you. The Mavericks lose last night in the quarterfinals of the NBA Cup. They will play again on Sunday. We don't know who that opponent is going to be just yet, but since they are out and they're not going to Vegas to be part of the semifinals and the finals, I know on the schedule it says they don't play again until the Clippers, I think, on the 19th. They're going to play again on Sunday. I don't know who they're playing yet, but they will play on Sunday.
This is a great break for them.
For sure.
The schedule was a rough schedule, then going to Oklahoma City, and they got through this, you know, I'm going to say going 10-2. If you look at the, I believe, last 12 games. So great job by the Mavs after starting off the season 5-7.
And it'll be a home game, too.
Yeah.
So, and they're in the midst of their home run, and I believe back-to-back maybe against the Clippers after that. And so you're in the midst of a long homestand.
So hopefully they can build on that 10-2 record. Hopefully PJ Washington, which I think hurt them defensively last night, hopefully he gets well.
Because that was the same kind of upper respiratory illness that's been floating around the locker room.
Najee came back and looked great. That was out of all the signs last night of losing a game, the great sign was Najee came back and looked great again.
Agreed. Now, people have been clamoring for more baseball. Man, I'm going to go ahead and throw this out there.
Leave the man alone.
My buddy's an idiot. The Major League Baseball Network is just harassing this fella that, like, I don't know, 12 years ago fell into the pond when they were doing the winter meetings here in the Metroplex, and they keep changing it up. They showed it every day. And now it's which team needs to make a splash. And they like put the Detroit Tigers logo over that dude's head when he falls into the pool. I saw them do it earlier with Cincinnati. They have shown this guy fall into that pond at least 20 times this week.
Alec, how much money could we give you? I mean, not making fun of you here, but you are the poorest guy here.
Oh, my God.
How much? So money's more of a factor for him to do this. For you to go to the Anatole tonight.
I'm in on this.
For you to just walk where that guy walked, because there's cameras there. It's still the winter meetings. Tomorrow wraps up the winter meetings. For you to just normally walk right into that pool and fall into it and look confused. And for the rest of your life, they will show you as the winter meeting guy, or now other guy, who did the exact same thing.
That's a tough question. Honestly, each person gives me $100, I'd do it.
Oh, man. I think that might be doable. I was immediately thinking I'd go a minimum of 50. So
$100 from each of us?
Yeah.
So $300 for Alec.
Wrong ginger.
As soon as you send me that video, Venmo's on the way.
I need payment first.
Mm. That feels fair. That does feel fair. All right. On the rim, Mike's taking out his cash right now. He might have $100 in his wallet. And I do believe that he, in fact, does have $100 in his wallet. Oh, man, he might be able to front the whole thing for us right now.
This is a fantastic bit. If he pulls it off, it's fantastic.
I have $300 for you right now.
Wow.
Look, they have the guy right now. Nolan Arenado is about to jump into the pool. Okay, and they're picking which team. He's limited to 6. If you do that thing, here's $300.
All right.
For you to go to the Anatole and to fall into that water.
Tomorrow. I think you'd have to do it tonight.
Yeah.
$300 cash
money in your pocket.
MLB Network's breaking down everything tomorrow, if that makes sense. Like, so they won't have all of those cameras. So you need to go to the Anatole tonight and go into that water.
I'll see what I can do.
All right.
Do you want me to give you the money now because you know you're going to do it, or give the money to you after you do it?
I'd rather wait. I want you to hold on to it. I want to confirm that I can be there.
Okay. I am excited to see this go down. I am also
Carter has to go with him and record this.
I guess we do.
Now we have to have another extra $300.
We're going to figure that out.
Will you go in there with him? What if you guys hold hands?
Carter said he'll do it
together.
Okay,
Carter did say he would.
He nodded when you asked. So
we're gonna figure that
double
out.
Or
oh yeah. Also, see if he can wear a fan shirt while you do it.
That's I got one.
That is a great idea. Now, we talked a lot about Nathan Eovaldi coming back. We haven't talked as much about the draft lottery taking away from the Rangers, and I still think we can talk more about Jake Berger, because one of the things that you continually hear is he is a bright spot in the clubhouse. So take that for whatever it's worth.
I got two quotes.
Oh, great.
I got a quote from Bochy and a quote from Schumacher, if you want to hear them right now. This is Bochy. He's an aggressive hitter who makes hard contact. A lot of hard contact, numbers show that, and just got better and better with his plate discipline. He can do a lot of damage at the plate. We're excited. He's going to be making our offense better, help us back to where we were a couple years ago, to being one of the elite offenses in the game. Schumacher said this: he's a winning player that hits the ball as hard as anyone in the league. He always finds a way to hit the fastball, but he works at it. He is a cage rat and preps to be the best version of himself each night. He wants to be a better player every day. He is only going to get better being surrounded by incredible players and staff that the Rangers have.
Okay, I want to break down some of the nuances of those quotes, but I want to go back
cage rat part
to the very first thing that Bruce Bochy said. And if you missed it from before, I'm going to paraphrase. If I get these numbers wrong, Mike, my apologies. The DH spot from the Rangers last year, over 162 games. So not just like this main DH or whatever. 203 with a 585 OPS.
That was the Rangers offense from DH last year for 162 games.
That is absolutely
with 14 home runs.
Dreadful. The batting average for Jake Berger has been pretty consistently right at 250. The OPS, 761. In 2023, it was above 800, and last year it was 760. So you're talking about not only, oh yeah, and you're adding, 14 home runs from the DH position?
14 home runs in 162 games.
All right. In the last 2 years, 34 home runs from Berger and 29. So let's even scale it down to 25. If you just take what this guy has been doing, potential upgrade for your DH spot. I know you could spot him at first and third some, but you're talking about more than about 11 home runs additionally, an OPS that's probably going to go up about 175, 185 points, and a batting average is up 47%. Upgrade, upgrade, upgrade. Plus, he costs $800,000, and he's in arbitration control for the next 3 years. Now, I realize you have to give up prospects. You don't just get them for nothing, but this feels like a savvy move for what is still a budget-conscious team.
Oh, absolutely. You get a guy that fits in with the clubhouse. Work ethic is on top of things. Like, you don't have to ask him to do a lot. Where didn't it feel like last year's there was at least one guy that you were just like, you felt like you were kind of dragging him to the field every day, and
yes,
he just was sad a lot.
Agreed.
So, you know, you're kind of getting that kind of energy from somebody. And like you said, it replaces a big void. When we talked with Bochy here, he was like, hey, look, everybody would love to have Shohei be in their DH. So, yeah, we do need to try and figure out how to have one there that can also, but as he said, do multiple things, not just be a DH for us.
Here's what I took out of the quote is the fastball quote from Boch. The Rangers were one of the worst fastball hitting teams last year, especially if you threw the ball hard. Now, this does not give me what he hit off of 95 plus mile an hour fastballs.
And I think, by the way, people know that's a shortcoming of Nate Lowe.
Right. And the Rangers in general is last year fastballs. He saw 1,085 of them, 52.1%. He hit 291 with 17 homers off of that pitch, a slugging of 537. The year before, he had a slug of 612 against those fastballs with 21 home runs and a 282 average. This guy eats up fastballs. The Rangers' weakness in their lineup was if you can throw the ball around 95 or harder and you can throw it at the top of the zone or above the zone, you will pretty much throw a shutout or close to.
And I know people continue to ask this. The reason why I think, I'll just speak for me, I keep saying DH. I know he can play some spot first and third, and I'm not you won't. Yeah, I'm not saying you won't need it, but that's not how I envision this. I don't envision this as your replacement for Nate Lowe whatsoever. I envision this as he's going to DH most of the time for you, and he fills, you used a great word, a void. That this team needs.
I'll go to football talk. You know when you get into the draft and you go, well, it gives you depth at that position, even though he might not start in his first year. Now, I get that Jake Berger's not 22 years old. He's 29, I believe.
Correct.
Is Nate Lowe is a free agent.
He's about to be 29.
Yeah, he's a free agent after this next season. So you have Nate Lowe right until 2000. You have him for one more year, and then he's a free agent. So now this gives you depth is that, hey, maybe Nate Lowe's on the team next year. Great. And so is Jake Berger. Great. But Nate Lowe leaves in free agency for a three-year, $36 million deal. I know I'm making up a contract right now.
I gotcha.
Well, now you're like, well, oh, no. What just happened? We don't have – no, we do have a first baseman. Relax. He might not be the best defensive first baseman, but Jake Berger's there for the next 3 years if we can't find another guy that we like or we didn't develop a guy we like. Or let's just – Corey Seager's going to move to first base, I think, at some point in his career.
I cannot rule that out.
Or DH. So whichever one it is, Berger can play first or DH. Or 2 years from now, Sebastian Walcott still in your organization. He's the 21-year-old shortstop that you weren't sure if he's going to be short, but he is. What do we do with Corey Seager? We move him to first base or we move him to DH. So there's a lot here where you have depth now where you're not worried about, let's say, 2026 first base.
The Seager's bat could be missing for periods of time too,
because of injury.
Because of injury,
true.
And like we're looking at this thing with the idea that it's going to be healthy all the time, and what's the perfect lineup. But when a couple pieces are missing from this thing, you need somebody else you can rely on for power. I'm not saying he's going to go step in and play shortstop by any means, but he can be that one that continues keeping the power in that lineup.
It's a whole nother topic, but I'll just do it quickly here. If you get 125 starts at third base from Josh Jung, are you pumped up, or is that not enough?
Yes,
that's amazing.
If you get 125 starts from Corey Seager at shortstop, are you pumped, or is that not enough?
Insanely good.
Yeah, I'll accept that.
That's, if I have my math right, you're leaving yourself approximately 37 games?
Correct.
37 games at third base that I need a starter. 37 games at shortstop that I need a starter. We know that the Rangers are working hard with Marcus Semien to tell him, we love your durability.
Yeah.
We love you want to play every day. We love all that. But are we getting the best out of Marcus Semien playing you 162 games at second base or close to that number? It looks like the answer is no, we are not. If I give him 10 to 12 games off of second base, where you get a day off 10 to 12 games next year.
Yeah.
That means that I need not just Josh Smith, but this is where maybe Jake Berger helps you out.
Yeah.
Is I need 72 games on my left side of the field, third base and shortstop, and I need a dozen games approximately at second base if Marcus Semien stays as healthy as he seems to always do. Plus, first base, I might have a tough lefty that I don't want Nate Lowe hitting against. So now Berger and Josh Smith, does that make sense on the infield? They can help me out a little bit more, and I'm not asking Josh Smith because there's probably going to be games where we saw it. Josh Jung and Corey Seager can't play. They physically can't play that day. So now if I need to play Josh Smith at shortstop, I know I still have Ezekiel Duran in the organization too, but now Josh Smith plays short, Jake Berger plays third. I'm not saying that's the best defensive lineup you can put out there, but it does cover you a lot better having Jake Berger being able to play a little bit of third, because I'm assuming I need 72 starts at shortstop and third base next year because of the injury history and maybe, I don't know, lack of being able to play every day from Corey Seager and Josh Jung.
Now, I got thrown off for just a second because I saw something. You were talking about this the other day, and so I've seen some predictive betting lines for the college football playoff, and you're like, hey, we're talking about plus 7-point lines again. If Penn State wins over SMU, they would be favored by 11.5 points over Boise State. And if Texas beats Clemson, so they're going up against a team that got a bye, they would be favored by 13.5 points over Arizona State. So to your point yesterday, I was like, oh, I don't know if it'll be that high. Well, it damn sure is going to be that high.
Dang. And last thing, I just got not complete confirmation, but we should have Jake Berger on our show either tomorrow or Friday.
Sweet.
Fantastic. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, let's shuffle it around. Go across the NFC East. How big of a flaw is this for the Eagles? Plus, Mike likes it. All part of the expressway. Next on The Fan.
What ends up being a 52-yard attempt for Jake Elliott, who has not made a 50-yarder this year.
Oh, man.
And the problems for Elliott from distance continue.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Let's talk about some of those Eagles field goal kicking problems and go across the NFC East in a second. But in the meantime,
let's get something away!
877-881-1053, caller number 10. No. We'll have no need to cry under that neon moon because you will win a pair of tickets to go see Brooks and Dunn on March 21st at Lucas Oil Live at Windstar World Casino. That is, of course, next year. Caller number 10, 877-881-1053. And we do have a couple of other notes for you for the Stars. Brian Ray reporting that Matt Dumba was not on the ice today. DeBoer said they're going to look further into it, and it is a precautionary method for now. But what's probably caught more people's attention nationally, I mean, I care about that a lot.
Dirk.
What's that?
Did it finalize? Oh, never mind. I'm still waiting on what you brought up yesterday with the Amazon thing.
Oh, okay. Inside Carolina on Twitter is reporting that UNC is finalizing their deal with Bill Belichick to be their new coach. So that is going to take away, you should be able to answer this easily, overreaction or reality, Bill Belichick will actually be an NFL coach next year.
Sounds like he won't.
Yeah, feels like that's
Can I ask
inaccurate.
You this question?
Yeah.
Are you guys disappointed? Were you hoping Bill Belichick was the next Cowboys coach?
A little bit. I have the same confusion as everybody about how is that exactly ever going to work around here, but I absolutely would have supported that.
The question I still have is how, like, where did it all fall apart for him in New England that maybe it was his mind of drafting? Nobody has proven the ability, except for them, to be able to lowball everybody and still get them.
Right.
Like, they lowballed everybody and, like, made them sad about life and just all these things. And somehow it was like, I have to be a Patriot. It was because of all the winning, though.
So this is where I'm wondering if college can be beneficial to him, because you're right.
He can hold it over everybody's head.
Well, that's true as well. But his downfall was he's bad at drafting. So maybe all of your scouts are like, hey, we need this kid, we need this kid. And then you let Bill check in occasionally and be like, hey, what about this kid? And you're like, hey, good job, boss. We'll go get him. But for the most part, you're overseeing the players that come in, and it's up to him to mold the people, mold the training, mold the facilities, blah, 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 blah. I think that could actually work out.
You go shop for me, yeah. And I'll take care of
exactly.
The cooking.
Exactly. I think that could work out really well.
And isn't Bill Belichick's girlfriend close to college age?
Oh, my God.
Hey, just real quick. How does that get a pass from society? Because that's objectively gross.
I don't know.
Like, he could be her grandfather, and people are like, that's so cool. I think that is not okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
It's a good question.
All right.
I just joked about
Who
it.
Who makes those rules?
No, I was
society,
just thinking about
though.
That for a long time when they're like, Leonardo DiCaprio keeps dating 19-year-olds, and he's like 50 or whatever, and that seems weird for me, too. Mm. All right. How do you think he'll do then at North Carolina, assuming the finalization does get finalized?
I think he'll do very well because one thing he and Nick Saban share is their attention to detail. And I think he'll have his players prepared for each game on how to not lose games. Mike's brought that up a lot of times, is they prepare them to not lose. And so I think there will be a very prepared team. Whether or not he has the best talent might not matter, because he knows he can do a lot with lesser talent because of their preparation. So I think he'll continue to do that. But if the reality is, like, he put it in a stipulation that his son was the coach in waiting,
yeah.
That's a weird thing to me to ask for that. But I think UNC will be a good college football team.
I agree with you to a point. I just don't know how much Bill Belichick, I mean, I'm assuming he does. You talked about it yesterday, the 400-page book or whatever,
yeah.
Like all these things. So obviously he wants to be very detail-oriented. But when we think about the history of college football, and I know there's different parts where different teams win for different reasons, but don't most teams win because they just have out-talented the other team at that level at times?
I think that's probably true. I'm not sure what that percentage is, though. Like, right. Is it 80% we out-talented? Is it 95% we out-talented?
Like Alabama and Georgia the last, I don't know, maybe two decades is too far, but at least the last 10 years, they're winning most of the time because is it? Yes, it is because of coaching, but then yes, it is because of talent.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think he'll get talent. I do think he will. But one of the things that he did in New England so well there, and maybe it was Brady, you know, we never will have that true conversation, was expose a weakness on the opponent. If they knew that you couldn't cover Julian Edelman, they were going to Julian Edelman 50 times in that game. And once you decided we're doing that, they're going to Gronk now. And so, like, that's one thing in college. You have more holes. You have more areas where you can be exposed. And I think that he's going to see how much easier that is to expose. Because in the NFL, it's the best of the best. In the college, you got a couple of really talented, unless you're the Alabamas, the Georgias. But you got a couple places where you're like, I know I can destroy this guy.
I'm also curious, and I know we'll find this out over the years probably, how much does Bill Belichick move the needle for a 16-year-old?
I don't know.
Well, I mean, dating-wise, we're getting close.
Oh, true.
But I mean, in terms of recruiting, how much does a 16-year-old kid is like, I got to go play for Bill Belichick? I'm seriously not sure.
Also, how much is UNC willing to spend on football whenever they have their basketball program they got to commit most of their money to?
I think that's a great question, too. I'm going to ask another great question that we don't have the answers to, but I want your opinion. The next 5 years, who's better in the ACC, SMU or North Carolina?
Oh, man. That's
I think it's going to be SMU.
I think SMU
will spend some money.
They have a head start right now, too, right?
Yeah.
Like, Lashley is his recruiting class is already in for next year. He's rolling in a really good product to continue recruiting. So I think he's got about a 2-year head start on Belichick there.
Yeah, I'm also wondering this, is how many kids are at good programs, maybe considered as good or better than North Carolina, and would want to transfer their sophomore junior year to North Carolina, go into the transfer portal and say, I'm going to play for Bill Belichick for a year or two.
Could be, for sure.
Because he's saying that he's going to put together such a pro program that will scouts, will NFL teams look at me as a better product if I go play for Belichick for a year or two?
I mean, probably.
Versus, I'm not trying to knock SMU at all. I think it's a very 50-50 question on SMU versus North Carolina.
Like Rhett Lashley versus Bill Belichick in terms of appeal to the next level. I get it.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, does Bill Belichick, if Bill Belichick tells you he has this quarterback and SMU has a quarterback and you're deciding, I'm sorry, I'm forgetting already the South Oak Cliff kid that's the quarterback for SMU.
Jennings.
There's like this similar quarterback and they're about fourth roundish type of grade a year or two from now. Doesn't Jerry Jones, I'm taking him for example, he's a bad example because of history, but
he trusts Belichick more.
Yeah, will he just be like, oh, I trust Belichick's answer more.
Probably.
So I'm taking the guy Belichick told me to take.
I can't rule that out whatsoever.
Yeah, absolutely seems like it would
and
be that.
And how much does that in the NFL, how much does that happen besides just Jerry Jones?
I think a lot besides just Jerry Jones. I really do. All right, we'll get back to more of this breaking story where Bill Belichick's finalizing his deal with North Carolina. But in the meantime, we're going to go across the NFC East. Always choose your own adventure. Who would you like to start with?
I'm going
to
choose the team that blocked a punt and had a win in their hands at 1 minute and 52 seconds to go.
That is the Dallas Cowboys. And I want to talk about Rico Dowdle a little bit more because he had 18 carries in that game, career high, 131 yards rushing, 7.2 yards average per carry, which is the first time a Cowboys had that many carries with that high of an average since Zeke in 2018. So it's been 6 years. Are you surprised, not necessarily that he's doing it, but that he's also doing it with a very like
patchwork,
offensive line?
I am surprised that they're able to do it as effectively as they have been the last few weeks. I'm also not surprised about the opponents they've done it against. So I still want to give them, you know, the credit on that.
Yeah.
But the offensive line that they've asked for hasn't been there all year. I'm kind of curious on the front of the conversation that kept popping up in early in the season. We couldn't get the run game going because we were already out of games. Why were you not running the ball well before you were out of the game, though? That was not allowing you to get the points that you needed to stay in touch with it. What was different then? Oh, well, it's like if you have to have more reps in order to be successful. That's not necessarily the case.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a part of it, but it's not necessarily the case. But it is nice to see what he's accomplishing for sure.
One more question. Any chance? I know your answer. Any chance this has changed your mind? If he's like, hey, I like it in Dallas, I'll come back for really cheap if you'll make me the starter.
Oh, Dowdle?
Yeah. Probably not.
Not yet.
I don't think so. I think you have to take his agent. First, he's going to rely on his agent. And then second, not saying he hasn't made any money. He has 4 years in the NFL. I know part of it practice squad, but like he has, I think you have to take, even if it's $200,000 more over 2 years, I think you have to take the $200,000.
Going into this season, and he's been with the Cowboys since 2020, he had 385 yards rushing. He has a real shot to get above 1,000. And that's total, all of it total. He has a real shot to hit 1,000 yards this year. That is the definition.
It's really cool.
Let's go cash in.
Yeah, that's like, really cool.
Just somewhere.
I'm assuming somebody gives him like a 2 year, $5 million deal, not per year, but like $2.5 million. Does that sound right for a backup running back?
Okay. And you think, and you're out on that?
I think I am.
Okay. I'm just asking.
I mean, unfortunately, I'm paying a crap ton to Zach Martin not to play football anymore.
Yeah. You're likely.
I'm going to have to start paying CeeDee Lamb more. I'm going to start paying Dak Prescott more. I get it's not max.
Micah's money's like on the way.
Yeah.
I'm going to start paying Micah Parsons. Yep. I can't afford a backup running back at that. I can't afford a backup quarterback at Cooper Rush's number, to be honest.
Kind of can't afford a starting running back. So I'm going to have a cheap starter as a rookie, probably.
Okay. Now, one of the people you're paying, CeeDee Lamb. He passed 1,000 yards scrimmage from scrimmage for the season on Monday night. Fifth season with at least 1,000 scrimmage yards. He's the fifth wide receiver in NFL history to open a career like that. Mike Evans, AJ Green, Justin Jefferson, Randy Moss, and now CeeDee Lamb.
Good company. Yeah. Very good company.
That is excellent.
I threw some numbers at you a few minutes ago, Kevin, and was like, hey, which receiver are you taking? 486, 61, 18, and 37 touchdowns. The 37 touchdowns ties Justin Jefferson right now, I believe.
Yeah, he's probably... I slotted it in the blind taste test,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
Jefferson, then CeeDee, then Chase, and I don't feel like that's an insane order to put them in at all.
I am asking you a card question / wide receiver question. Yep. Are you surprised over time that it doesn't matter how great of a receiver you are, Chase, Jefferson, Lamb, how cheap their cards become because nobody cares about wide receivers when you're collecting cards?
I am very surprised about that. I'm actually surprised. I thought this defensively, like whether it was Aaron Donald or hell, even Lawrence Taylor or now Micah Parsons. I'm also surprised that those don't move the needle more. I really am.
We love wide receivers. We love watching them. We love talking about them. And yet nobody loves collecting them.
Yeah, it is a weird thing. You guys want to go Giants, Commanders, or Eagles?
Well, I mean, the Eagles are fighting for number one seed.
No, and the Eagles have, that's true. The Eagles also have a very pronounced flaw in their game. Jake Elliott, I mean, you heard the audio we played. As soon as he kicked it, they're like, oh, that's not going in. He missed a 52-yarder. He's 0-for-5 this season on 50-plus yard field goals. I'm not saying that should be an automatic. I think we have gotten a little spoiled in the kicking world. But are you concerned that, like, you can't just say, hey, if we can get to the 40, we got a shot. Or we get to the 35, we got a shot. Like, you need to get to at least the 31, it feels like, for him to have a realistic shot of making these field goals.
Yeah, no, that is a significant weakness. But that's where I guess they feel like they have it covered because of the tush push. Like they feel like they can pick up a yard when they're deep in their, you know, so they're like, we can continue to push this and we can get him a little bit closer.
Can't they just pick up a Dallas Cowboys cheerleader's boyfriend over here?
Cade
soon?
York. Oh, yeah, you're right. Cade York is going to be available soon, we hear. So
that is true.
And I do think this off of kicking. Yeah, I think it has to be tough to win a Super Bowl with a below average kicker in today's game. And like for the Chiefs, I know this is NFC East. They better get Butker. They better get Butker back.
Yeah.
Before the playoffs, because they're going to lose if they have to go with a dude who at 31 yards out or Doinked whatever it is, like can't kick it down the middle, because they are relying on field goals at the end to win.
Now, some positives if you're an Eagles fan. This is now four straight playoff appearances. That is the longest streak by an Eagles coach, behind only Andy Reid, who made it to five straight playoffs from 2000 to 2004. The Eagles.
And we all agree that the Eagles' success is largely because of the team, not necessarily the coach.
Yes. Whereas maybe I didn't feel
with
that
Andy
way.
Reed,
with
Andy Reid. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I think that's the tough part, is when you compare the Eagles to the Cowboys and you just look talent for talent. Like, even if you want to say C.D. Lamb is better than A.J. Brown, fine. I'm not going to disagree. Or that Micah Parsons is better than any defensive player they have.
A lot of deficiencies.
It's just like, okay, but it's close, right? Maybe not Micah Parsons close to their best defender, but you just start going to, like, every other position and you're like, hey, if they're better at that many positions, how are you supposed to get better than the Eagles in the near future?
No, I think that is a very fair question, especially when you see players like this, Jalen Carter. So Jalen Carter, who we all feared when he got taken by the Eagles, he generated a career-high six pressures on 38 pass rushes.
Pretty good for a defensive end.
For a defensive end, yes, and that's not where he plays.
He's a tackle.
And so if people are like, well, Micah got 10 or 12, I get it, but he's the most feared pass rusher in the league.
Mm-hmm.
All right, this is a defensive tackle, and he got four of those pressures in the first quarter. If you have a defensive tackle that can get you four pressures in a quarter, holy freaking crap, look out. And that is part of the reason why the Eagles have won nine straight games. That is tied for the longest winning streak in franchise history. They also did it in 1960, 2003, and 2017. So for a variety of reasons, the Eagles are on a roll. I'll make these last couple super quick. The Commanders, they were on a bye. They still sit in the seven seed, but something to watch with them is their run game. They're third in the league in rushing yards per game at 157. When they don't get to 100, that's three of their five losses. So I know we talk about Jaden Daniels, and he can run the ball, but so goes the running game for this Commanders team. So goes their fate in the regular season and if they make it to the playoffs. And then this note for the Giants. I'll just bring up the most important note. The Giants went into their last game with only one interception, and they made that interception in week one against the Vikings. That means they had gone 11 straight games without an interception. That was the longest drought by any team since 1933. What's special about 1933? That's the year the NFL started keeping statistics. So in reality, it's probably the longest run in history, but they did it, even though they lost the game. Trey Hawkins got an interception. That is now two interceptions on the season for the New York Giants.
Congratulations to them.
See, that's the spirit.
Kevin, did you throw out this Ja'Marr Chase stat recently? This goes back to the Cowboys, if that's okay.
I don't know.
It's the 170 and two scores and 10-plus catches stat.
I do not know
that. All right, then here we go. With the 14-177 two touchdowns against the Cowboys, Ja'Marr Chase is the first receiver with 10-plus, 175-plus, and 2-plus scores since
Jerry Rice.
Ja'Marr Chase did it in Week 10 against the Ravens, who was the first, who was the first receiver to do it since
Ja'Marr Chase.
Ja'Marr Chase did it in Week 5 against the Ravens, and he was the first one to ever do it.
Maybe I have to rethink those rankings a little bit.
Wild.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Right now, it's time for Mike Likes It.
Well, this is a day old, but I'm going to go to this first, and maybe I get to Dirk Nowitzki in the Game 7 documentary second. Is the power rankings on NBA.com.
Okay.
And last week, Kevin, I believe we did this on Tuesday. I think they come out on Tuesdays.
Yep.
They were fifth, the Dallas Mavericks.
Okay.
I'm not going to make you guess, but they've moved up to fourth. Now, they lost last night. I'm saying this is a day old because this does not have them losing last night. But I find this very interesting. is that Cleveland stayed at number one. And I want to give you guys real quick. Last night they talked about this on the – I watched TNT instead of doing the antenna. Is the offensive rating for Cleveland is second. Defensive rating is ninth. Their net rating is second. Okay, I know that's a lot, but their offense, just think about this. Their offense is second overall. Their defense is ninth overall. A lot of times they say, if you're going to be a true contender, you need to be top 10 in both categories.
Okay.
Now, you can maybe get away with, because remember, the Mavericks weren't, but if you take the last after the trade, they were.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, well, they weren't. Then they made it to the final. See how that's, well, let's just take when they got PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford. They were a top 10 defensive team. In fact, I think they might have been number one going into the playoffs for that 20-game stretch, and that's where people like Gilbert Arenas couldn't get their head around that. They're like, I'm not saying all year.
Yeah.
It's just the trade deadline that they have become good at defense. But so they are second and ninth offense, defense, second overall. The Boston Celtics are the number two power-ranked team. They are number three offense. They are number 10 defense. They are number three overall in their net rating. So they're a plus 9.3.
Surprised they're that low on defense.
Yeah, they are. You would think that they would be higher than that. They're 19-5, by the way. So they are defending their title in the regular season pretty well right now. Number three, the team you lost to last night, the Oklahoma City Thunder. They are eighth in offense. They are first in defense, and they are first in net rating.
And maybe because of those things, I know your point is not necessarily just the power rankings. I think I would probably go Celtics, Thunder, Cavs, and have the Cavs in third.
I got you. I'm with you, too, but they are, the Cavs right now are having a year where you're top 10 in both. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the Mavericks are fourth. They were fifth. They've moved up to fourth overall in the power rankings. They are fourth in offensive rating. They are eighth and getting better by the game. In defensive rating, because they got off to a rough start defensively. They are fifth overall in net rating. And by the way, this is another one. I'm not going to get into it with all teams, but pace, where would you put them in pace of play? There's 30 NBA teams, so obviously 30th is the team that plays the slowest basketball. First is the team that plays the fastest basketball.
I think they've moved to the middle of the pack. But that's probably about it.
No, they were one of the slower teams in the NBA last year until the season progressed.
And then they got
faster.
They are
seventh overall in pace of play. So the Mavericks have improved into a top 10 team. So when you're watching them, yes, Luka plays at his own pace, but he's playing at a much faster pace than he's played at most of his career. So fourth, eighth, fifth overall in your net rating. That is really good. And this now will start showing the power of the Western Conference. Even though I said earlier, I do think Oklahoma City and Dallas are on a collision course. If the bracket works out the right way, that they will play each other in the Western Conference Finals. Fifth, the Memphis Grizzlies. Last week they were ninth. They have moved up to fifth. They are fifth in offensive rating. They are seventh in defensive rating. So they would be considered a true contender. It feels like a lot of haves and have-nots in the NBA.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, here's quite a few teams that are going to be top in a lot. Now, here's a weird one. Golden State is 14-9, and they are the sixth team power-ranked in the NBA. Offensive rating. This is going to be really weird because of what we've thought of the Warriors for a decade.
Yeah.
They are 15th in offense. They are fourth in defense.
And see, I kind of knew that just because of how much better the defense has been when Draymond is off the court, and usually that's been a killer for them. So I could see that.
Now the Rockets come in seventh. So after you had Cleveland and Boston power ranked 1 and 2, we've now run into five straight Western Conference teams. And this has been, I remember talking to David Aldridge. Chris Arnold was up here earlier. I remember back when I was working with Chris Arnold, we had David Aldridge on, and I was like, this is 2017-ish, I'm going to guess. It's just a guesstimate. And I'm like, David, can you believe that it's been 20 years since the Eastern Conference was considered the better conference than the Western Conference? And he's like, it'll change. Don't worry. It changes. Blah, blah, blah. He has like, since Michael Jordan and kind of your Isaiah Thomas's, like, it's just like, the Western Conference is just always a much better conference that the Mavericks have had to compete in. And if they're in the Eastern Conference, he's like, here we are. Literally since Michael Jordan hit the shot over Byron Russell, it is now getting close to 30 years in a row. And not like, oh, well, there was these 3 years. The Western Conference is just, ever since Michael Jordan retired from the Bulls, The Eastern Conference has been a load of dump. They have good teams up top. They always have a LeBron-led team, let's just say, in Cleveland. Or you had the Boston Celtics for a while there with Paul Pierce and Garnett and Ray Allen. Or you have right now the Boston Celtics. Or, you know, there's always a good team or a couple. But your depth in the Eastern Conference has been a pile of dump since the mid-90s. And that's amazing to me as the Rockets are seventh. The New York Knicks are eighth. The Orlando Magic are ninth. And the LA Clippers are 10th. So you're about to play the Clippers a couple times. Their net rating, offensive rating, 24th. But part of that is they play at the 23rd fastest pace in the NBA. They are a slow team based off of. So James Harden is still playing James Harden style of basketball. They are going to be a super slow team. That's where the Mavericks used to hang out at because they would run the similar offense, the James Harden offense, through a Luka Doncic offense. But anyways, the Mavericks did move up a spot in the power rankings. This was before the loss to Oklahoma City. These power rankings came out. But the Mavs are still, to me, they got off to a rough start. They are playing great basketball. They just didn't have a great game last night. They gave good effort. Luka just had a really tough game but gave great effort. How about these numbers or these little kind of nuggets from the Dallas Mavericks in the power rankings? Derek Lively has now started the last 12 games he's played in, and even though he's now playing against other starters, his defense has still been much better with him on the floor. So it's interesting that Gafford and Lively share this position, but the defense does change with Gafford on the floor. Not to a bad defense, but with Lively on the floor, you could say the Mavericks have the best defensive team in the NBA. With him on the floor, Derek Lively, it's 100 points allowed per 100 possessions. That's been with him off the floor, 112.9 points over this 12-game stretch, not the whole season. So the Mavericks over 100 possessions are 13 points better with Derek Lively on the floor versus most likely Daniel Gafford. And I'm not taking a shot at Gafford. Gafford is a good player. I like him a whole bunch. But your defense with Lively on the court, so when he leaves, your defense becomes average in the NBA. With him on the court, you could argue that it's the best. Probably not the best. Oklahoma City steals the ball 750 times a game, it felt like last night. But that just goes to show how good of a defensive player Derek Lively is at 20 years old.
Yeah, I feel like length and bounciness helps him. Gafford is he's the bigger size guy. It's a weird thing because they're both so tall. But Gafford currently, I feel like, has the ability to do a little bit more heavy lifting, where Lively can. His defense on the perimeter is actually really good. And that's something you're like, whoa, he just jumped out there and made a shot go away because he's able to get out there.
Not including last night, the Mavericks had played four games in the month of December. How many more free throw attempts do you think the Mavs had shot in those four games over their opponent? Because this is one of the reasons.
I know it was a lot last night. 35.
That's good. Over four. That would be like almost nine more per game.
28.
Yeah, the number 72.
Good gosh.
Over their four December games, the Mavs have attempted 72 more free throws than their opponents.
Going to the basket. Aggressively going to the basket when they do.
Man, that is a lot.
Last night, a little bit different, right? They made the point of Luka's only shot at, you know, at 1.4 free throws. And I believe
Oklahoma City didn't have very many free throws last night.
No, but
did they?
Mavericks, that's one of the keys, is they are getting to the line more. Now, I'd love for them to shoot free throws better. That's the one thing, is like, we need more attempts because we are just not a good free throw shooting team overall.
Because
Klay Thompson's a great free throw shooter, but he doesn't get to the line anymore because where his game is at. The Mavs trade deadline deals last season have affected their defense, but they've also changed the team's shot profile, with Dallas taking 46% of its shots in the paint after acquiring Gafford and Washington, up from 42%, the league's lowest rate prior to the trade. So they're taking that trade deadline and showing that the Mavs are getting to the paint a lot more this season. The Mavs have taken 50% of their shots, eighth highest rate in the paint, with that being the league's biggest jump from last season by a huge margin.
I'm going to throw it real quick to Alec for some more baseball breaking news.
This is a fun one, Mike. Garrett Crochet, the White Sox starter, is headed to the Boston Red Sox, according to Jeff Passan of ESPN.
one. So
okay.
That's interesting because, I mean, I know obviously totally different positions, but Red Sox are one of the teams heavily involved in the Soto sweepstakes. And we talked about you pivot, whether it's Freed, Crochet, you have to have your backup on backup plans in place.
Boston's not going to be a bad team. They died in late August, September because they did not have pitching depth. So it's just one pitcher, don't get me wrong. But that does help them possibly with their depth. And he's a number one. When he's healthy, he's one of the best left-handed starters in the game today. So that's big for them. Let's see what else they can do because they're competing against Baltimore and New York to try to get into the playoffs.
For the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, it's time for the C Block starring Corey Majors.
How long would you wait for season tickets? Dirk, and have you ever been arrested on a mule? We'll talk about it next in The Fan.